This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
President Obama takes a first step toward gun law reform, while gun owners head to the store, and they're not just buying more firearms. That and how much does it cost to keep kids safe? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Sarah Gardner in for Kai Ryssdal, and this is the Marketplace podcast for Wednesday, December 19th. Thanks for joining us. The White House today unveiled its official response to last week's mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. President Obama says by January, he'll have concrete proposals to send to Congress aimed at reducing gun violence in this country. Vice President Joe Biden will lead the effort, which the president says will not be business as usual.
This is not some Washington commission. This is not something where folks are going to be studying the issue for 6 months and publishing a report that gets read and then pushed aside. This is a team that has a very specific task to pull together real reforms right now.
Likely on the table, reinstating a ban on assault weapons, for one. One thing that's not happening, however, a decrease in gun sales since Newtown. They've spiked. But as St. Louis Public Radio's Adam Allington reports, the trend extends beyond firearms.
Under normal circumstances, you might confuse the rush of customers at Mid-America Arms in South St. Louis as Christmas shoppers. But not so, says owner Mark Campbell.
It's been one of our best days in the history of 13 years, but not for the right reasons.
Gesturing to his depleted shelves, Campbell says many of the customers are buying ahead of what is expected to be a ban on certain types of weapons.
The walls pretty much picked through any type of paramilitary rifle. We're down to just a few now.
Also completely sold out, most high-capacity magazines, like the 30-round clips used in the Newtown massacre. Shopper Mike Charleville says he feels like he's running out of time.
I just read today on MSN that Bloomberg in New York, he's got his flags waving and he's all for all kinds of gun control. And I think that our liberties are going to be taken away before too long.
Likewise, Jeff Neighbor said he'd planned on saving his money for a new truck, but the events in Newtown changed his mind.
I had some magazines that I was planning on buying, but, after that happened, I thought, boy, I better not wait another week.
Legislation expected to be reintroduced in January would ban clips of more than 10 rounds, and while the market for magazines and clips only accounts for a tiny fraction of the total gun industry, their continued use in mass murders means their shelf life may be quickly shrinking to zero. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Here's your fiscal cliff update for today, and it won't take long. President Obama said Republicans have a personal grudge against him. House Speaker John Boehner's spokesman called the president's opposition to Boehner's Plan B bizarre and irrational. Doesn't sound like a deal's just around the corner, does it? Well, one thing we can count on, the $50 billion bailout deal between the federal government and General Motors is coming to an end. The Treasury Department announced today it will sell its stake in the company, and it looks like the government will take a loss. So, American taxpayers, did we make a bad investment? Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
GM stock closed today at a little more than $27 a share. At that price, the stock would have to more than double for the government to break even on its investment. Dan Eikenson is with the Cato Institute. He was against the bailout.
Taxpayers need to assume a loss of $15 to $20 billion.
But Sean McAlinden of the Center for Automotive Research says taxpayers actually should break even. Is he math challenged? No. He says you have to look beyond the bailout cost and stock price. You have to consider what would have happened without the bailout, how much it would have cost taxpayers if the government did nothing. McAlinden says laid-off GM workers would have been eligible for unemployment checks, and the government would have lost tax revenue.
People without jobs, they don't pay federal tax. Instead, it's a negative effect.
Then there's the trickle-down effect. Without GM, auto parts suppliers would have struggled, maybe gone under themselves. The car makers use many of the same suppliers, so assembly lines at Ford would have ground to a halt. Dealerships would have suffered too. Edward Lapham is executive editor of Automotive News.
There would have been economic sinkholes in every community from the dealerships that were no longer selling vehicles.
Of course, the Treasury Department says the GM bailout was worth the cost, but a top Treasury official also says the government should not be in the business of owning stakes in private companies for an indefinite period of time. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Fiscal cliff talks bumpy, Wall Street grumpy. Details when we do the numbers. It feels strange to talk about drought when many of us have been carrying umbrellas and even shoveling snow the past week, but the drought in the Midwest is still wreaking havoc on folks who ship goods up and down the Mississippi River. The river's near record low levels, and barge owners say their businesses are at risk if the river gets much lower. Austin Golding in Vicksburg, Mississippi, co-owns Golding Barge Line, which ships petroleum products. Mr. Golding, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So I understand that you have gotten some rain, but just a little. What's happening right now to try to get barges like yours moving along the Mississippi?
Recently, what they've done is thankfully gone in ahead of schedule, about a month ahead of schedule, started blasting some of this rock out with explosives to help expand and alleviate some of that channel clog right there at the in the middle of the upper Mississippi River.
Yeah, explain that to people. I mean, that would be like that rock threatens the bottom of your barges, right?
It does. We need 9 feet depth of water in order to transit safely through that area. And so as the river level falls, it starts to threaten that nine-foot threshold. Unless we get some more rain or this blasting process alleviates it, we won't see any relief anytime soon.
Mr. Golding, what's been happening with your business? You, as I understand it, your barges carry petrochemical products. Deliveries slowed down? Are you losing money?
Well, deliveries to that area are having to be reduced. This is going to have a direct impact on all consumers within the United States.
But are you putting less, lighter loads on those barges just so they can get through, which means, I guess, less money to you?
That's exactly what that means. We operate nationwide, so this is just affecting one section of our business. But as this river falls out, even with the blasting, it could fall out with a pace fast enough to where the river will be effectively shut down by January, which would be a huge hit to many towing companies, and then that cost and that hit get passed on to the consumer.
What's going to happen after that?
Well, I'm not sure even the sharpest meteorologist could tell you that. Really what we're looking at is a situation where we're going to wait and see. You know, if we get some more rain like we have recently and it can sustain us to the springtime before we get a lot of the rain and a lot of the snow melt, that'll be great. But if it doesn't, we're just going to have to see how far and how fast this river wants to fall out.
Austin Golding is co-owner of the Golding Barge Line based in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Mr. Golding, thanks for talking with us and good luck.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back. Okay, tell the truth. How much of your workday have you spent shopping for gifts this month? Now that you can get pretty much anything online, there's no need to brave the mall, right? But that doesn't mean you don't need to shop around. This year, retailers are changing online prices all the time. That pair of earmuffs you're getting for dad, they might cost $30 at noon and $20 a couple hours later. That's known in the retail biz as dynamic pricing. And as Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports, it can make a big difference to a company's bottom line.
Say you're a retailer and you're selling a box set of Star Wars DVDs. How do you decide what to charge for it?
Use the Force, Luke.
Of course. But what if you're fresh out of Force? You could ask holiday shoppers what they'd be willing to pay.
$175.
I'd probably be willing to pay about $100 for it.
I wouldn't spend anything because I wouldn't want to buy them.
Those prices might sound a little bit all over the place, but Amazon's price for a Star Wars Blu-ray DVD set has been a little bit all over the place, too. In October, the price tag for the DVDs was $100. The week before Black Friday, $70. On Black Friday, $90. The day after Black Friday, $134. Then it fell to $84.
It used to be about where to buy to get the best price. Now it's about when to buy to get the best price.
Mike Fridgen is the CEO of Decide.com. It helps consumers track online prices and will send them alerts when a price drops.
Fixed price is a thing of the past. Today, consumers are faced with price changes happening minute by minute.
Those changes are controlled by pricing bots. Pricing bots are computers that use algorithms to decide when to nudge prices up and down. They're looking for three main things, says pricing consultant Rafi Mohammed.
The first is competitors' prices, so what's the competition charging? The second is how are your customers responding? And finally, it's supply.
Mohammed says retailers are trying to find little windows of opportunity to boost profit margins or sales, and they have more than real-time information. These days, they have a not-so-secret weapon, personal data. Retailers know things about us, what we've purchased in the past, how many times we've looked at a product. Robert Phillips is a dynamic pricing expert at Columbia's business school. He says companies are starting to use our personal information to figure out how much they can charge each shopper.
This new world where for consumers, we know, well, what's their click stream, what else have they viewed. That part is very new.
The concept, though, is very old. Phillips says this is exactly what car salesmen do when they size up customers based on what they're wearing or the car they drive onto the lot.
That's what the value added of the salesperson was, being able to look at you and say, aha, I wonder what she'd be willing to pay.
And now it's a robot.
Now it's a robot.
So if the price you paid for things used to be about where you shopped and now it's about when you shop, soon it could be about who you are. But companies have to be careful that customers don't strike back, says pricing consultant Rafi Mohammed.
If it becomes very public that retailers are charging different customers different prices at the same time, that's going to be bad for the brand. Because pricing is an integral part of a company's brand. And if they mess up, it can destroy a brand.
But in today's lackluster economy, dynamic pricing often works for the consumer, says Decide.com CEO Mike Fridgen.
It's never been a better time to be an online consumer. You literally have retailers changing their prices minute by minute, competing with each other for your business.
But, says Fridgen, it pays to pay attention. As for those Star Wars DVDs, for the past week, Amazon has been changing the price a couple times a day, from $70 to $84 and back. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
You can track daily price changes for the gifts on your list with our holiday price tracker at marketplace.org. We've been tracking five products, including that Star Wars DVD box set. Stacey's also put together a few tips for getting the best prices online. A hint, forget weekends. Coming up, low-calorie drinks targeting male consumers.
Ladies,
Wonder what men are always doing out in the shed?
Well, it's a guy thing, like Dr. Pepper 10.
But first, let's do the numbers. And the Fiscal Cliff soap opera churns on. Today's Plan B plotline helped push the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 0.7% or 98 points to finish at 13,251. The NASDAQ threw off 0.3% or 10 points to end at 3044. The S&P 500 snipped off 0.75%, that's 10 points, to close at 1435. Swiss bank UBS sank more than 1% after being slapped with a $1.5 billion fine over the LIBOR scandal. Mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac could face up to $3 billion in LIBOR-related losses, according to the Wall Street Journal. Shares of Freddie Mac were off nearly 3%. Fannie Mae gave back 0.3%. And with the Christmas shopping season winding down, retailers had mixed feelings about the future. JCPenney rang up 3.5%. Nordstrom bagged a gain of 0.2%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. We'll find out how many homeowners are putting up a wreath in a new house. The National Association of Realtors releases existing home sales for the month of November. Wondering how full those pantry shelves could be? We'll get an idea of the appetite for Swiss Miss and Slim Jims when ConAgra reports profits. And 5 years ago today, Pablo Picasso's Portrait of Suzanne Block, worth $50 million, was stolen from a museum in Brazil. The painting was later recovered. I'm Bridget Bodner.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Sarah Gardner in for Kai Rizdahl. A lot of parents are worried about their school's safety after the Newtown tragedy, and the headlines are reflecting that. Time Magazine's reads, "School Security: Why It's So Hard to Keep Kids Safe." Fox News has, "Massacre Sparks School Security Alerts Nationwide." Well, here's the Marketplace-y headline. Does spending more on security really make schools safer? Reporter Shireen Marisol Meraji has that story.
Like, these are new, right here. So,
Craig Hockenberry, the principal of Euler, a public school that goes from pre-K through high school, is proud of his security upgrades.
We have 22 additional doors that section off the school.
Marketplace has been following Euler's progress in a year-long education series. Principal Hockenberry wants the school to be the beacon of safety in Lower Price Hill, a poor Cincinnati neighborhood where crime and blight are everywhere. And he's willing to pay for it.
The police, I can give you that figure, is upwards of about $30,000 a year that I set aside from our general fund budget. The cameras, $250,000 in cameras probably. I don't know what the doors cost, but at the end of the day, I think anything that could slow down a potential shooter or a potential problem to give the good guys time to respond is something very important to us.
Dan Dominich is the executive director of the American Association of School Administrators. He says Craig Hockenberry is like most school administrators, deeply concerned with kids' safety, even when budget shortfalls demand a long list of cuts.
There have been a huge number of teacher layoffs around the country as a result of that. Professional development, unfortunately. They've cut back on instructional materials and supplies, but nowhere on the list does school security appear.
Annette Fuentes, author of Lockdown High, When the Schoolhouse Becomes a Jailhouse, says security surveillance and hardware can range from a couple of thousand to tens of thousands of dollars. And she says spending all that money on high-priced equipment wouldn't have stopped the Newtown shooter.
Adam Lanza was determined to get into the school, and he had a small arsenal of high-power weaponry to get in, especially at a time of budget deficits for public schools. Investing in high-tech security and more armed police is not the way to go.
School safety and security doesn't necessarily always take a lot of money.
Kurt Lavarello was a school police officer for 18 years. Now he's the executive director of the School Safety Advocacy Council. Lavarello says expensive security systems can make schools safer, as does
common sense. You want to create an environment that's open to dialogue, that kids feel comfortable talking to adults.
Lavarello says training teachers and students to speak up when someone looks suspicious or when bullying takes place, that's cheap. And it works. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
here's a number that caught our attention. The average manufacturing worker in the U.S. makes around $35 an hour. That's according to a report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics today. But some of the best paid manufacturing workers are about to retire, and a lot of those, mostly union jobs, will disappear.
The American dream.
Millionaires, billionaires.
Class warfare.
Paycheck to paycheck.
We pay our fair share.
From our Wealth and Poverty desk, Marketplace's Chrissy Clark traveled to Flint, Michigan, the cradle and perhaps the grave of Michigan's labor movement, to see what's happened as those union jobs have gone away.
Here's something that used to be true if you grew up in Flint, Michigan. Unionized factories, or shops, as you'd call them, because you're a local, were everywhere. Buick City, Chevy in the Hole, Fisher Body. And so you'd use these shops as landmarks to navigate your way around town.
Take a left at the shop, and it's a drugstore right there on the right and stuff like that.
That's Sierra Chase. Growing up in Flint, everyone she knew worked at a union shop. It was the path. High school straight into the factory, where you could make a decent living to raise a family. Meaning union shops didn't just help you find your way around town, they helped you find a way into the middle class. Of course, now, all those landmarks are gone.
They're tore down. That's how gone they are. Where General Motors used to be, it's as flat as this table. So you can't use that as a landmark to find, you know, what you want.
So how do you find what you want these days in Flint? Chase is hoping the answer is here at Mott Community College, where she is now studying in a student lounge. Chase is 45. Around the time she was finishing high school in the 1990s, most of the auto factories were shutting down. She found a job as a home health aide, but the money's pretty bad, which is why she's back in school now for a nursing degree.
Hopefully in the next 3 years. That's a big hope.
There hasn't been a lot of hope in Flint lately. It kind of left town with the factories. The landmarks now are boarded up buildings and police tape. Flint has one of the highest murder rates in the country.
Flint is so depressing to me now, because every time you turn around, it's somebody you know who died, and it's not even a shock no more.
Another Mott College student, Keosha Betts, age 20, is cramming for finals in the student lounge. Her plan is to get out of Flint, where, like the rest of the country, the fastest growing parts of the economy are low-wage service jobs. That fact is painfully obvious to Betts' friend, Crystal Rawls.
I was just going through like the little job search engine. It has like local jobs in Flint.
They run down the list.
Fast food.
Yeah. Retail.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of people getting jobs in group homes around here too, though.
Group homes is more popular, but...
But the problem with all these listings, they say...
It's a minimum wage. It's an hourly job. You can't expect like... all kind of benefits and everything like that. It's not a career, it's a job.
Which is exactly why Rawls and Betts are in college here. And that's a really good idea, says Charles Ballard, an economist at Michigan State University.
The real secret to prosperity for the future is having a more highly educated workforce.
There's just one problem. Even though colleges like Mott are filled with people trying to get highly educated, the reality is, for a bunch of different reasons, most people are not. 70% of Americans don't have college degrees. Ballard points out, just in his state alone,
we have several hundred thousand high school dropouts, and we have millions who have a high school diploma, but who nevertheless don't have the skills that are really necessary to fit into the modern economy.
Ballard says a generation or two ago, we could provide middle-class wages and benefits for people who didn't have college degrees, in big part thanks to those unionized factory jobs. But the economy has changed since then.
That is really the great challenge that the entire country, and not just Michigan, faces.
Which brings us to another landmark that's still standing around here, a bar called BJ's. No one in Flint calls it that, though.
It's not BJ's, it's Dancing Sandwiches.
Dancing Sandwiches. A bartender here, Valerie James, explains that they have dancing and they serve sandwiches. So that's what the sign says.
We get new people coming in, they'll go, where are the Dancing Sandwiches? Aw, man, you just missed them. They just clocked out.
But James says the humans she knows doing actual clocking out these days, they can barely make a living.
This is like a ghost town around here anymore. Hard to find good paying jobs. Right now, I think everybody's just grabbing what they can get to make ends meet. You got a family, you need to do whatever, you know, you can to support them.
And for those who don't have a college degree and don't plan on getting one, that means the brightest spots on the landscape are mostly low-wage jobs, like bartending. In Flint, Michigan, I'm Chrissy Clark from Marketplace.
You can see all of Chrissy's reporting from Michigan at marketplace.org. remember when soda used to be simple? Diet Coke, Pepsi, Dr. Pepper? Well, now we've got products like Dr. Pepper 10, and now they're going to roll out 10-calorie versions of other soda brands like 7-Up and Sunkist. Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports on how these new low-calorie drinks target a male market, actually a bro market.
Now, this can be hard for a public radio listener, but to understand, you really need to put yourself inside the mind of the bro. Imagine the morning after a long night of watching Ultimate Fighting with the dudes from your beer pong league. After dousing yourself with Axe body spray, you notice your shirt just doesn't fit the way it used to. But zero-calorie sodas, those are for girl diets, not bros.
Dr. Pepper 10 marketing was geared toward males.
John Sisher is editor of the trade magazine Beverage Digest, and he's putting it very, very lightly.
Ladies, wonder what men are always doing out in the shed?
The Dr. Pepper 10 campaign is wall-to-wall bro, with power tools, explosions, giant TVs, and of course, a cowboy riding a mechanical shark. Bro skulls can be thick, so to be absolutely positive, the message gets through, the ads end like this.
Dr. Pepper 10, it's not for women.
10 manly calories, in Dr. Pepper's words. But what about selling to the non-bro section of the population? Joe Pollack is with the food consultancy Technomic.
They may be missing an opportunity to also attract women, because there's a number of women as well that do not like the diet drinks.
Marketers know what bros know. If there are too many bros around, women disappear. The new low-cal drinks will target men and women, promising more flavor than diet drinks. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
And a final note on today's story about the government selling its remaining shares in General Motors. One of the terms of GM's federal bailout was a ban on GM owning corporate jets. That ban will now be lifted, but GM execs say they're in no rush to buy any fancy new planes. And for good reason. The big three automakers got slammed back in 2008 when they used them to fly their CEOs to Washington to beg for government loans. And since all that bad press, sales of new business jets have fallen by a third. Coincidence? And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow lost 0.7%, or 98 points. The NASDAQ threw off 0.3%, or 10 points. And the S&P 500 snipped off 0.75%, that's 10 points. Ravi Karman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, and Brendan Willard engineered the program for us. I'm Sarah Gardner. We'll meet you back here tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.